Welcome into the Savannah Area FCA podcast presented to you by Vaden Nissan Savannah. Brad Lane of the Savannah Area FCA sat down with Antoine Turner, the head football coach of Bethesda Academy, to talk about his journey with Christ, playing football, and developing young men into leaders that will continue to impact our community.
I'm here with Coach Antoine Turner. Coach, you're the coach here at Bethesda Academy. How long have you been here?
I've been here since 2002, so this is actually my 17th year here and 15th year coaching.
15th year.
Yes, sir.
You and I have known each other a while.
Yes, we have.
Yes. I don't even know how far that goes back.
It's close to maybe 2005 or it's around there.
I mean, when you got here?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I know we've known each other for quite some time.
Yeah.
We really appreciate. I don't know if you remember Ed Polkinen.
Yeah.
You know, and he actually got us introduced to the FCA, and we've had a great relationship ever since. You know, with you coming on board, man, and just doing an outstanding job. You know, you've really lit up the place here in Savannah and the coastal area, and we just appreciate the relationship that we have.
Hey, you can stop. Okay. Stop all that talking.
Oh, maybe they hear it, man. You get a raise, you know what I'm saying?
Some things we've never talked about tell me where you grew up. I don't think we've ever talked about all this.
Grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. So I actually grew up in Decatur, and it was kind of funny because I grew up on Midway, and the next street over was Atlanta. So I grew up in Decatur, and the next street was Atlanta. So I went to school in Atlanta. I went to Lakeside High School growing up. Started at Henderson High School, and then the school became middle school. So I ended up merging and going to Lakeside High School. So that's where I was born and raised.
They've had a lot of that merging in Atlanta.
Yes, sir.
And a lot of new schools created.
Absolutely.
So what sports did you play?
Played football, played baseball, and I ran track. Stopped baseball when I got to high school, and I just focused on football and track and field. And you know, just enjoyed that, and it's a hard decision because, you know, baseball was something I grew up playing as well, but I knew football was my number one sport. If I really wanted to be great, I needed to run track, so I kind of made a calculated decision.
So you saw those two as together then, running track as a way to get better at your craft at football.
Absolutely.
So what events what events did you run in track or?
Track and field, I ran the 100, 200, the
sprinting stuff.
And we're at the 4x100, 4x400, and also did the long jump.
Long jump.
Yeah, I know I'm short legs, but it was something to do. You're not a tall, stacky guy. Not at all.
But you didn't.
Not a big jumper. I did a triple jump as well, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, did long jump, triple jump, so knew the art of how to do it, but just didn't have any crazy hops. But if you ask me, I'll tell y'all dunk. So
we always knew the real athletes were the triple jumpers.
Absolutely.
Yes. And I always saw the 400 as probably the toughest run.
It's a man's race.
That's a man's race.
Yes, sir.
You better have something in the rib cage.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
So I didn't do the 400 straight out, but the 4x4, your adrenaline get going. I need a little boost. I need a little help.
Yes.
But when that adrenaline gets going, I mean, you're off to the races.
I had an old coach tell me one time, I don't know if you remember Buddy Etheridge.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
Buddy Etheridge, he blinked like he taught mm-hmm. me. He said, Coach, you know how you know if you run that 400 correctly or not, don't you? I said, no, Coach, how you know? He said, if they don't throw up when they get done, they didn't run it right.
You didn't give it your all. Full body cramps and everything.
Yes.
It's quite a race.
So what was it like growing up in Atlanta? Your family life and tell me about that. You got brothers and sisters, your mom and dad?
Yep. Got both parents. Grew up with both parents. I have one older sister and one older brother. I was actually the baby. So growing up in Atlanta, it was fun. It was, you know, had a lot of family around. I grew up around family. We grew up on tough times, you know. If you talk to our parents, they thought we had it all, you know. But being in a neighborhood, I mean, it was tough. We had our challenges. We had our temptations. And it was quite a challenge, you know, in the neighborhood in which we grew up in. And we grew up in that neighborhood for 17 years, you know, where it was a drug house two houses away from our house. You know, things, again, our parents just didn't know. I mean, they were just hardworking parents and, you know, but we were in a neighborhood that was survival of the fittest.
So I'm guessing you stayed away from that, or your parents made you sure you stayed away from that.
There was one of those houses, as you call them back then, the trap houses, and this trap. They called them a trap house.
Okay.
And it was a creek in between, and the next house was our neighbor's yard, and then it was our yard. So it was one of those houses that it was a lot of activity that took place, and everybody in the neighborhood know when you walk past that house, you walk fast. You know, now if you want to kind of dwindle and kind of, you know, it was just a lot of stuff that took place, and it was that type of neighborhood, and it was things that you could get involved in. Of course, I didn't get involved in that house, but excuse me, but there are other things that you can get involved in as kids, and it was things that we grew up just being exposed to that kids probably shouldn't be exposed to. But it was, again, it was a neighborhood that, you know, was survival of the fittest. But what I think what separated me was that even though I was in that neighborhood, I grew up in a Christian household. You know, my parents did a great job of, you know, even when I didn't want to go, I was made to go to church, you know. And my dad got laid off on his job. And, you know, so it was a struggle as far as eating, as far as having stuff. I didn't have all the best attire. I remember shoes coming apart, you know, but you faking it till you make it. And it actually, you know, really kind of made me want to become an entrepreneur, because I started getting my lawnmower and I went out and started cutting grass just to make sure I can get some shoes. I mean, it was tough, but it kind of made me who I am today.
So you would attribute to your parents more than anybody by not stopping by that house?
Well, they didn't know anything about the house.
Really?
But yes.
Okay.
And it wasn't just that house. But that was the one that everyone knew, that this was a lot of traffic for older people. Now, the kids, as far as the neighborhood and stuff to that nature, a lot of the kids start getting involved and stuff. And so the temptation to get involved and stuff was always there. You know, there were gangs in the neighborhood, you know, back then. You know, you look at the gangs today and it's extensive, but there were gangs back then that we knew of. You know, so it's just a neighborhood that was just, again, you had to, having what we had helped me to come out, and my parents and my brothers and sisters as well.
So what role did your coaches play in that, if any?
Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, my coaches really didn't play a great role in that. You know, I had coaches that I know to this day, but it wasn't a big tug, you know. It wasn't like I had a desire to play football. My desire and my love for the game. I grew up and played in, of course, a big public school in Atlanta. And, you know, my brother had a great influence on me because he was a starting tailback as a junior. And I watched him and I watched his work ethic. I mean, he would work extremely hard. We had weights at the house. He'd come home and work out at home and, you know, doing his push-ups and his ab work, you know. And so I watched him and I watched how he was starting. He was representing the school. And, you know, and so that for me was a motivating factor. You know, our coaches didn't spend a lot of time with us. You know, we didn't, I mean, again, it's a big public school.
Yeah.
Either you're the man or you're not.
Yep.
That's how it worked. I mean, so it wasn't any encouraging words that I remember from our coaches. It was nothing that I grabbed, and I was just like, okay, I remember this. Now, I remember being on a losing team, and I remember, you know, one of our coaches lined us up, and, you know, it was kind of funny. I mentioned it the other day, but we were all on a knee on the goal line saying, never, never, not this time, you know, and it happened every single week. We're getting smacked, you know. we joke about it now, but it was like we're saying this every week. I'm thinking to myself, and we're at week 9, Coach, are we still gonna get on our knees and say, I mean, we're 0-9, and here we are, never, not again, not this time. And so it's stuff like that that you remember. But outside of just really making, and not that there weren't good guys, but did they make a strong impact on my life? No, sir.
I got you. So how did you get to Savannah? I mean, you eventually you graduated from there. Yeah, yes, you played at Savannah State, correct?
Absolutely.
Is that what brought you to Savannah?
That's what brought me to Savannah. So came down to Savannah here to play football in 1997. And when I got down here, I was here from 1997 and graduated in 2002. So had an opportunity, redshirted first year, had an opportunity to play under Daryl McNeil, who when I first came in, the late Daryl McNeil, he passed away. And, you know, he he did a great job. And that's where coaching started to impact my life. Daryl McNeil was a great man, and you know, you could really see his heart when he coached. And he had a pride hat. He had a really raggedy hat, and he brought it out every week. You know, it was his pride hat. And he had a few things that you just kind of remember, you know, that makes an impact. You know, one of the things he used to say is, no matter how good it seems, no matter how bad it seems, but somewhere in between, reality must fall, you know.
That's a lot of truth to that.
A lot of truth to it.
And life.
Yes. And then the defense coordinator there at that moment was Steve Wilks. He's now, he was head coach Arizona Cardinals. Now he's the defense coordinator for the Cleveland Browns. And that's who made a dynamic impact on my life. I played cornerback, and he was hard-nosed. But at the same time, it was during the time where he was finding himself as a Christian. And so it was, he made a very, very valuable impact on my life, in not just playing football, but also being able to live a Christian life, you know, and still do the things you need to do and love the game at the same time.
Now, you mentioned this a few times about your faith. Where does your faith come in all this?
13 years old was a day I was in church, and we were in what you call watch night service, and you know, right before the New Year's, and it was at that moment that I gave my life to Christ. And of course, going through knowing the truth, and then I wanted to be closer to myself, but then temptation, of course, and so I, you know, started kind of getting out there a little bit. It's one of those things where my dad was a minister. He became a deacon in 1992. I was in the seventh grade, never forget it. And I'm thinking to myself, and then he had a lot of pressure, because now people know that your dad's a deacon in the Lord's church, and then he became a minister, and they start thinking that you got to be this. I'm like, guys, I'm not called to be a deacon. You know, so I, you know, tried to go overboard to just show that, hey, I'm who I am. I'm not, you know, so got out there a little bit, start doing some things that I wanted to do, living the way I wanted to live. And but it wasn't until, you know, God really, really got my attention in 1999. And this was going into my junior year as, you know, in college. And it was very, very powerful, in that I saw myself going down the wrong road. And in the midst of what I was doing that was wrong, my mom always taught me to pray. And I had this question, should I pray now that I'm in the midst of sin? And I just went to sleep, didn't pray. And as crazy as it sounds, but this is my testimony. I dreamed about nothing but fire. I wasn't in the fire. I didn't see anybody in the fire. And I woke up in a cold sweat. And when I looked in the mirror, I stepped outside of myself, if you can imagine. And it's almost like someone pushed play. And I'm looking in this mirror, and I saw Jesus on the cross. And I saw all the stuff that I was doing. And then I saw Jesus on the cross, and he looked me in my eyes and said, I did it for you. With blood dripping down, I mean, and it never cried before. It totally messed me up. And here I am in there. I'm upstairs in Alhambra, what was Alhambra Apartments on Victory Drive. And I'm upstairs, boo-hoo crying. I mean, no one's there. No one's singing, come to Jesus. I mean, no one, you know, no one's saying,
no altar calls,
no anything. And it was an encounter that I'd never experienced before in my life. And I broke down and I got on my knees and I said, Lord, I'm going to walk for you. And, you know, and I said, Lord, and I confessed, Lord, here are all the stuff that I'm doing, and I can't do this without you. You know, and that was the mark of when, from the standpoint of being obedient and being a disciple, that's when the walk began.
More of a surrender time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's good to know he forgives all past, present, and future stuff.
I'm telling you.
Got a lot of grace.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So why did you go into coaching? You got that. We know about your faith. You got that surrendered part, and you're playing at Savannah State. You're getting out of school. So let me ask you this. What did you do next? Did coaching come next, or something else come next?
Well, I had an opportunity to – I went home. I thought that going home was my next phase, and was going to find a job up there and start working. And it was – I got a knock on that old, you know, that door, and woke up in the middle of the night and, you know, had a dream about being in Savannah, and I ignored it. I woke up in the night, and I had hunger pains, went downstairs, grabbed a bowl of cereal, still hungry, went back, you know, and I studied the word in Luke chapter 5. In Luke chapter 5, the Bible says, thrust out a little from the land. I said, okay, Lord, you know, what are you trying to tell me? And you know, God spoke to me clear as day is, I need you to come out of your comfort zone. And I still didn't want to do it. And I had an interview at Palmer Johnson down here in Savannah. And, you know, I ended up coming back to Savannah. God called me back here. I didn't know why, you know. But I just said, okay, Lord, I'll do it. I'll go. And I came back to Savannah. My dad brought me down here. Didn't have a place to stay. Didn't have anything. I just came. You know, I asked my dad to bring me back down to Savannah. The Lord was calling me back here. And I didn't tell him the Lord was calling me here. I just told him, I got an interview at Palmer Johnson. I'm going back to Savannah. You know, and I end up going to, I told him to bring me to Savannah State at the Village Apartments and just drop me off here. I'm all good, you know. So he waved and, you know, and we said our goodbyes. And I didn't know where I was going to stay, didn't know what was happening, but all I knew was that God called me to Savannah. So I'm like, okay, God, what in the world am I going to do? You know, and it was a kid that I'd helped before. He was now a college student, he was a junior. When he was a freshman, he needed a place to stay. And it's just funny how the Lord works, you know, and I offered him an opportunity to stay with me. And he was the first person I saw when I walked around a corner of the Village University of Village Apartments at Savannah State. And the first thing, he didn't say hello. He didn't say what's up. He said, hey, you need a place to stay? It was almost like God was already working it out, you know. And I said, yes, you know,
so
but it was kind of
crazy.
You were
dropped off in Savannah, no place to live.
No place to live.
Just your stuff.
Didn't have any relatives here, just stuff.
Just knew you were supposed to be here.
Just knew I was supposed to be here.
Don't know what you're supposed to be doing.
Nope. Didn't have a clue.
Just the geography, just Savannah.
Just Savannah.
And what you knew of Savannah was Savannah State was the most familiar, so that's where you went.
Yeah, and I knew, of course, my church, and that's Temple of Glory Community Church, and that's all I knew. And, you know, and that was just, it was tough. You know, it was tough because I didn't know really what God wanted me to do here in Savannah. And so after having the interview at Palmer Johnson, I went to church, and there was a woman there at church that said, you know, hey, you know, you ought to come out here to Bethesda Academy. She was working out here during the time. She was doing our prison ministry. And I was like, Bethesda? Yeah, you know. So I was like, okay. So I went out there, did the application, you know, came out here. And of course, it was $9 an hour. And I'm like, all right, I didn't graduate, you know, to be making $9 an hour.
Sure.
You know, so clearly, of course, in my mind, I'm thinking no, but then I had another dream, you know, and God showed me myself being here. And it was kind of crazy. And so I said, okay, God, if this is where you want me, this is where I be. So I accepted the job at $9, not very happy that I'm in the will of God, but saying, okay, God, you're going to have to move some mountains here. You know?
$9 an hour,
That's not going to cut it, man. That's not going to help you, no, sir. But needless to say, we were able to kind of jumpstart a little bit to football. We were able in 2003. is when we started to do this flag. We started this flag football. I looked on campus and started developing relationships with the guys on campus. And I'm like, man, these are guys that can use football to really help them to build a character. And we had four cottages on campus. And we started what you call flag football on campus. And we did it back on what used to be a cow pasture. And we got all the administrators involved, all of the staff involved. You know, I had them to come and be coach of over actual cottage. And we did kind of a round robin.
So it's cottage against cottage.
Cottage against cottage, you know.
Okay.
And at the end of it, you know, our president at that time, Dr. David Tribble, says, it's nowhere in the world we can have this and not start football. So he, after doing that, he signed off on, we're having a football team next year.
So you were the one that started the football program here.
Fortunately, by the grace of God, yes.
With the help of some, we know that it takes, yes. A turtle doesn't get on the fence post by itself, does
it? No, sir. No, sir. Not at all.
Somebody had to put it up there.
That's right. Yeah. So we were fortunate enough to start the program here. And as far as how did I get in, that's how I got into coaching. Just really, you know, of course, having a passion for kids, but, you know, having a passion for kids, you can do something totally different.
Sure.
I had a passion for the sport as well. You know,
yeah.
I got a passion for football. I love all sports. And football, I said, if I can't play football, then the next best thing to do is to turn around and give back and actually coach football. And that's what started us into coaching. So we started our first 8-man football in 2004, and we started 11-man in 2006, and here we are today.
Wow. That's quite a story. It's got to be based on what you tell. How is your faith expressed in your coaching and what you do with your players?
It's a good question. Now that's the $1 million question, because that's where I guess the rubber meets the road. Because
that's right.
When you look at coaching in many times, in many cases, when I first started coaching, I thought about all the coaches I had. And when you're first starting out, you're trying to emulate coaches that you've had, and you're trying to do the same thing that you've seen.
You don't know any better.
You don't know any better. Yeah. You're wet behind the ears, man. You're just trying to, you know, you're trying to swim to survive. And, you know, and it was really, you know, when I remember getting on kids, going out there yelling and hoorah and screaming and everything, which is fine and good, but then it dawned on me. I'm screaming at a kid that I hadn't taught how to play this position. And I'm like, okay, I'm yelling and I'm screaming, but I'm not teaching. So, you know, God kind of knocked me back a little bit and kind of helped me realize that, okay, I'm not calling you to do this the way it's been done. I need you to do this to make an impact for the kingdom. And it really got my attention, because I was like, well, how do you do that? You know, and I heard somebody say, you know, it's not, there's a difference in being a coach that happens to be a Christian or being a Christian coach. And I heard that at FCA, you know, and being a Christian coach means that I'm a Christian first before I'm anything else. Being a coach is just what I get a chance to do, you that's know, right. And so it's not a part-time job. And that's where I think it's hard for coaches to understand. I mean, and I was like, you know what, I don't want to go out here and coach one way and then come home and have to flip, take that hat off and be somewhere and be something totally different.
Compartmentalize. Yeah.
I actually get a chance to be who I am 24/7 in a day. And that's the beauty in what I get a chance to do. And that is, I'm a Christian coach. You know, and now being a Christian coach, and Jeff Dukes, I think, said it best, you know, and he was talking about, when you're in Christ and you now understand more about the word and you understand your responsibility as a coach, then you can coach in different dimensions. And he was talking about coaching in the first dimension is just getting them to understand the X's and the O's part. And every coach, if you're worth your salt, then you should coach in the first dimension.
If you don't, you're going to get
If you don't, you'll be fired quick. Yeah. You know, no quick. Everyone's going to know it. You know, if you don't know what you're doing, you're not going to training, you're not trying to get any better, you know, you're not going to last long. So, but most coaches stay in the first dimension. And he was talking about coaching in the second dimension. Now you're no longer just talking about the X's and the O's. Now you're talking about kids that have issues. Now you're talking about, you know, the divorce rate that at the time he wrote this book was, I believe, 72% of kids were growing up in single parent homes. And I'm sure that number is a little bit higher now. You know, and he also mentioned how three out of every four households of kids, three out of every four kids have heard the words, "I quit," from a parent or relative. And that's tough. Yeah. So when you look at now the stuff that these kids are going through, coaching has taken on a different form, because now for me, looking at coaching, it's more now of a platform. So my coaching philosophy, you know, starting out now, is totally different. It's coaching from the inside out. It's now, if I can make you a better person, if I can help you build your character, then of course I can help you with the X's and the O's. And so now the objective has changed, you know, to now, how can we help these kids to launch and be the young men that God has called them to become? So now I don't think, for me, I can't do one without the other. I mean, I can be a Christian without being a coach, of course, but I can't be a coach without being a Christian.
Yeah, that's good. And I've often heard that you can't be a tour guide to somewhere you've never been.
Absolutely.
And so you having that faith and being able to express that with your players, I mean, that's got to come across to them on a regular basis. Fellowship of Christian Athletes, our mission is to lead every coach and every athlete into a growing relationship with Jesus and his church. And our strategy is to and through the coach. How have you seen us as a ministry, as FCA, minister to you?
Well, for me personally, the FCA, actually, me and my wife, allowed us the opportunity, paid for, expenses covered, to go to the Cove, you know, where we have Billy Graham's Cove, and we had a chance to attend a marriage seminar there and just get away and relax. And it helped my wife to, I mean, just be able to enjoy. And it was just powerful, you know. And there was the chaplain there from Detroit Lions and spoke a great message. I mean, it was just a great getaway. And it has really been a resource, I would say, for me as well, to be able to do what we do effectively. And, you know, Bibles, from giving out Bibles. 2005, I believe it was the first time we went to an FCA event, and we've been going ever since. But it was totally paid for by the FCA. We didn't have the resources at that time. We're just getting started with football, you know, but I knew it was very important to get our guys to football camp, start teaching them about football, but more importantly, teaching them about the Lord. We had a lot of kids going through a lot of stuff. And when I heard about this FCA camp, it was my first time hearing about it. I was like, wow, this is like killing two birds with one stone. I mean, why wouldn't you, you know, want to take your kids to an FCA camp? And FCA took care of all the expenses. I mean, we had, you know, all of our kids, all of our coaches. Well, at that time, it was just the two of us. And it was just, it was a phenomenal experience where 18 of our kids, you know, gave their life to Christ. Mm. And just a phenomenal experience. And it gave us a stepping stone, you know, for this. Even now, here we are in 2019, and I wouldn't go a summer without going to FCA camp. And FCA have done tremendous things for our program, providing resources for our coaches. Just mentioned a 3D book by Jeff Dukes. You know, we use that for our coaching huddle, and it's just been a major resource for us, and that we really do appreciate, a vehicle to really deliver the word of God.
So that is the to and the through. We through you to be able to,
yes,
minister to your players in that way.
Absolutely.
Your coaches huddle, you mentioned that. Tell me about your coaches huddle.
Meet? We meet every Sunday for coaches huddle. So before we do any X's and O's, we talk about any of that, you know, we spend 15 minutes, you know, with just getting together, praying, and going over, getting into the Word of God, you know. And sometimes we'll use the Kings and Coaches. Sometimes we'll use the Jeff Dukes. And but it gives us, again, that platform where we really can talk as men now, you know, about the things that men go through and deal with. And as coaches, dealing with these young men, because sometimes, you know, you can be frustrated dealing with a kid, an offensive line coach, you know, can't reach a certain kid, and, you know, and then a receivers coach saying, I'm struggling with the kid, and here we are, you know, being able to use the resources and use the Word of God to see where, you know, the struggles that everyone's having, it's a second dimension struggle. And we're trying to coach them in the first dimension,
yeah.
And you're hitting a brick wall, you know. So things like that really help us to understand a little bit more that, okay, maybe I ought to step back. You know, it's crazy because this week, and I know we got to wrap up, but this week, I was thinking to myself, sometimes you have good things, sometimes you have losses, and it brings you to wondering what's going to happen on a Monday. But then it's tough when you have victories, and then you're thinking, what's going to happen on a Monday? And I was getting ready to give him a golf cart this past Monday, and I was like, okay, what's going to happen this week? You know, what's going on this week? I mean, it's been that type of year where things happen. And the Lord just kind of gently reminded me, what's going to happen is we have to change our perspective on when we approach a Monday and say, okay, Lord, what ministry opportunity will I have this week to be able to be effective in the life of these young men? And again, that's what our coaches huddle allow us to be able to do. And I was able to share that with our coaches, and our coaches is like, that's a good perspective. And so now coming into the week, we come in saying, okay, we're ready to serve. And it's a reminder.
It's good. And I know you brought people in to speak at that. I've had the opportunity to come spend some time with y'all, and that's been,
yes, sir.
You can tell you got a good environment there.
Yes, sir.
Well, Coach, I appreciate you. Appreciate your leadership and what you do. And blessings on the rest of the year.
Thank you so much for having me. What you do is really pivotal because it helps us to be able to do it and gives us a platform to do it. And, you know, and the resources. And like you said, you came and spoke to FCA. Wes have come and spoke to our team. And it just, FCA has been very gracious to our program. And we really love FCA and would encourage anybody to become a part of FCA.
Yeah. And we can't do it without people giving to our organization. So,
yes, sir.
Just trickles right on down.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.